You get to play with fire today. So as soon as I shut up, don't do anything before you put on goggles and keep your goggles on your eyes the whole time today. What is the technique that we're doing today? It's called calorimetry. So the metry part means it's a measurement of something. Calor means heat. Calorimetry is a technique in which the energy content of some sample is measured. And there are different techniques for calorimetry, but we're going to do this based on the heating of water, which is what will be in your test tubes. Not the samples themselves, just water in your test tubes. But the reason this works is because of something that I taught you in a different unit. Back when we had the chapter that was all about the specialness of water, remember I told you that there is such a measurement that's called the specific heat capacity. Any given substance has a specific heat capacity. Do you remember what that is? What's the definition of specific heat capacity? That's right. The specific heat capacity of anything is how much energy is required to raise 1 gram of that stuff, whatever it is, by 1 degree centigrade or 1 Kelvin. Well, here the stuff is water. And so, based on pure water, there is a special unit that was created. That unit is based on not only specific heat capacity, but the specific heat capacity of pure water. The specific heat capacity of pure water is the amount of energy required to raise exactly 1 gram of pure water by 1 degree, right? Well, we give that amount of energy a special name, a special unit, which is the calorie. Now, here is something that is among the most stupid things I've heard in all of science. You have this unit, calorie, pronounced calorie, and spelled this way, and you have another unit called calorie, which you probably couldn't tell the difference by me pronouncing it, because it's pronounced exactly the same, but it's with a capital C. And they are not the same thing. Truly stupid. To distinguish them, when I'm speaking, I'm going to call calorie with a lowercase c a scientific calorie. That's what I just told you it is. It's one scientific calorie with a lowercase c is the amount of energy required to raise exactly 1 gram of pure water, 1 degree centigrade, or 1 Kelvin. And by the way, how much volume is occupied by exactly 1 gram of pure water? Right, a cubic centimeter, otherwise known as a milliliter. So a liter is 1,000 milliliters. It's 1,000 grams if it's pure water. Well, calorie with a capital C is actually equal to 1,000 calories with a lowercase c. Someone thought this was a good idea. It's not. In other words, an uppercase calorie is equal to 1 kilocalorie. Now, when we use the word calorie all the time outside of science, but usually we're using it in relation to food. calorie doesn't necessarily have anything to do with food. Like I said, it's just a unit of energy. But food contains energy. That's why we eat it. And so that's why energy content of food is measured in calories. But the calories that we use when we talk about food and just call them calories, that's the uppercase calorie. So scientific calorie, food calorie. And a food calorie is really 1,000 calories. Just a single food calorie is 1,000 calories. That means one food calorie is really enough energy to raise the temperature of 1,000 grams of water by 1 degree. That's one way of looking at it, which would be a whole liter of water. Or it's enough energy, a single food calorie, to raise 1 gram of water 1,000 degrees. That's a lot of energy, especially because water, compared to other things, is harder to heat up. And if you look on food labels, it usually says that for a typical adult male in this country, 2,000 food calories is the daily intake. Well, that means 2 million scientific calories, right? So just to stay alive, every day we take in enough energy in food to heat up a gram of water 2 million degrees, sorry. Or to raise the temperature of 2 million grams, which is 2,000 liters. 2,000 liters of water takes a lot of heat to change it even 1 degree, if you can imagine doing that, because just think how long it takes a small pot to boil. 2,000 liters is a lot harder to heat up, but that's just one day's energy for us living. Anyway, this whole thing is so confusing that eventually they realize how stupid it is, and that's why on modern food labels you're less likely to see the capital C calorie anymore, and they are starting to say kilocalories, which is the truth. Alright? Well, back to calorimetry. Calorimetry doesn't necessarily care about whether something is food or not. It's simply measuring the energy content of it. But things that we say have zero calories nutritionally doesn't mean that there's no energy in that stuff. It just means we can't get any nutrition from it, so it's counted as zero calories. Like cellulose, for instance. One of the things that you are testing by burning it today is a wooden stick, which is almost all cellulose. It's chock full of energy, but we don't get any nutrition out of it because, as I said in lecture, we don't have the enzymes to break it apart, right? So we can't absorb it into our body and use it as fuel. Therefore, food-wise, it's considered to be zero calories. But you'll see when you burn it that it has a lot more than zero calories. It'll heat your water up well. Okay, so we are using this definition of a calorie based on heating up water to measure the heat, to measure the energy that is released when we burn our samples. And burning, putting flame to something, causes an oxidation reaction. A combustion reaction. That's what we do with our fuels in our body. We just don't do them all in one step with flame and release it all at once. But when we use our fuels, which is what Unit 3 is all about studying, we are combusting those fuels. That's how we get the energy out of it. All right, so the idea here is to measure the energy released from the sample, to estimate it, to calculate it, based on a measurement of how much the temperature of a known mass of water changes, knowing that it takes 1 calorie to heat up 1 gram of water 1 degree. You're not using 1 gram. What's your volume of water? The mass of water you're using?
10 milliliters.
10 milliliters, which is 10 grams. All right? So that would mean if it changes 1 degree in temperature, that would take 10 calories to do that, right? Because you're using 10 times as much water. And a 6-degree change would mean 60 calories it would take to do that. Does that all make sense? All right, now this is a very crude technique that we're using. And I think somewhere in the manual it tells you to compare your answers that you get with food labels for the various samples. Well, you shouldn't expect your estimates to be anywhere close to the food labels, because it's such a crude technique that all of your answers are going to be way low. That's because you're putting a flame to it, which takes a while to get it burning, for one thing. So you burn a little bit of it even before you put it under the test tube that has the water in it. That's obvious. That energy that's released by burning it to getting it started is not going into the water at all. So it's just wasted. It's not accounted for. And also, even if you hold it directly under the water, as you're supposed to do, most of that heat just goes out into the air. There's nothing forcing it only into the water, right? So yes, you will heat your water and you'll get your answers for the calorie content, but expect them to be way low based on reality because of this crude technique. A much more careful technique, which is what scientists use to get those values for food labels, is called bomb calorimetry. Named after the fact that it uses a stainless steel, thick-walled stainless steel chamber called a bomb, because it looks like a little bomb, that you can unscrew and put your sample in, whether it's food or ground-up animal or whatever. You put your sample in there, you know exactly how much you have. It's important to measure the mass of it. And then you seal it up tightly, and this thing is fitted with electrodes inside so that when you have it all sealed up, you can spark it. But before you spark it, the space in here is pumped full of pure oxygen. A combustion reaction is a reaction between something and oxygen. And if you have pure oxygen, that means you have way more than you need, so the combustion reaction will go to completion. In other words, it will burn entirely. You won't have anything left over, just ash inside the bomb. Well, the reason this works is that before sparking it, this bomb and its sample is put into a chamber filled with water. An amount of water that's carefully measured, just like you're measuring a specific amount of water, 10 grams. This is a much bigger chamber, but it's not. They don't just say, okay, that's enough water. It's very carefully measured how much is there. And this stainless steel bomb is entirely immersed. So when you hit the electrodes and burn the stuff that's inside it, every bit of that energy can go into only the water. So the water captures all of it, in other words. There's none going into the air or any other place. You also lose some energy, by the way, by seeing the flame in this crude technique. But it's all captured in a bomb calorimeter. And therefore, you have a very careful measurement of the air, of the water temperature before, and then another very careful one after. And based on the specific heat capacity of water and how much there is and how much the change is, you can calculate how many calories were released from that sample and therefore were contained in the sample originally. Those are how it should be done, and that's why the true values that you find on food labels are much higher. As crude as it is, though, it's good to go through this, but you should do it as carefully as possible. So let me give you a couple hints on that. One thing is that none of these samples is going to burn completely. You're going to have leftover stuff that has not burned because you're not pumping it full of pure oxygen. That's no problem, though, because All you need to know is how much did burn. And the way you figure that out is by carefully weighing the sample before it burned and after. The difference in that is how much actually burned. So it doesn't matter that you have some left over, you're going to subtract that out. But, especially the sugary stuff, while it burns, it can drip stuff off. You want to make sure that you catch anything that falls off of it while it's burning, because you need to subtract that stuff as well. That's why you should always use a piece of foil underneath your setup to catch anything that drips. Okay? Now, you're not going to be able to scrape all the stuff off that drips either. So that means you need to, for your final mass, the mass has to include the mass of the foil itself, which of course shouldn't be included, right? So you do that by measuring, you know, putting your foil down onto the scale, or I'm sorry, zeroing the scale before you put the foil down. Include the foil and your sample in your initial mass. And then burn however much burns, and then bring back what's left on that same piece of foil and get a final mass, zero it again before you put the foil and the leftovers on it. And that way you're subtracting not only the leftover food, but you're subtracting the foil itself. And so the difference will be only the food that burned. Does that all make sense? So make sure you do it that way. Another thing you need to pay attention to is that even though the water isn't going to be ruined, you don't want to reuse the water from sample to sample. And that's because you don't want the water temperature to get anywhere close to boiling. Here's why. I think I mentioned this for a different reason in a different lab. But when you heat up pure water, if this is temperature versus time, you heat up pure water, of course, the temperature is going to go up gradually. But only until you hit the boiling point, and then it's going to level out and stay at boiling point, whatever it is for those conditions. It's not necessarily going to be 100 degrees, it depends on pressure. But anyway, it's going to stay at that until you don't have any more water left, liquid water. Well, you don't want to be anywhere near this plateau, because before and after is going to give you zero, right? It's going to be the same temperature. So you need to make your before and after temperatures in this range where it's still increasing. And if you just used the water from the previous trial, it would already be hot, and therefore burning something else under it might get it into here. That's why the manual also tells you that even if your sample is burning well and there's still a lot left, keep your eye on the temperature, because if it gets up to, what's the limit it tells you? 80? If it gets to 80, blow it out. It's okay to have that left over, because like I said, you're going to subtract that out, but you don't want it to get to the point that you're close to this. And the temperature, by the way, will continue to rise for a few seconds even after you blow it out. So keep your eye on the thermometer. And then start with a measure out a new 10 milliliters each time with equally cold tap water, distilled water, room temperature water. That all clear. Other than that, the only thing you can really do wrong is to have your thermometer be touching the glass or not be entirely submerged. The bulb has to be fully under the water, but not touching the sides or the bottom of the glass test tube. And it takes a little bit of playing with this stuff, moving things around. This clamp is where you clamp your tube in, but you can move all of it independently so that you can get it into a place where it's not touching. Make sure that's all set up nicely before you start burning, because you want to get a nice, stable initial temperature, write that down, and then burn. And by the way, when you're burning, this is a Fisher burner, you don't want your fish, pretend this is burning already. You don't want to keep your Fisher burner right by your test tube, because just the flame itself will heat up the water, and that has nothing to do with the food, right? That would give you a false reading. You don't want it to be so far away, though, that you're going to lose even more heat while it's burning until you get it over to the tube. So keep it, you know, about that far away. And only get it burning. Don't keep it on this flame longer than you have to, but keep it there long enough so that it's burning on its own, and then get it directly under the tube to capture as much heat as possible. Be careful with the Fisher burners, especially if you have long hair, because you might not even see the flame. Sometimes it's invisible, but it will still burn the hell out of your hair if you lean over and put it there. So be really careful on that. And is the gas on yet, or do I have to turn it on? It's on. By the way, these valves are fully on when you have them out 90 degrees, and then they'll go back to off. Okay? And you don't have to turn them all the way on to light them, but sometimes it's surprising how high you have to turn them on to get them lit. And if you've never used a sparker, it's just a matter of doing that. Just turn it on until you kind of hear it hissing. Just that. All right? Make sure you don't have this burning underneath here either. That's why there's some burn marks, including that one right there. I think that's it. Go ahead and enjoy.